Well, reenacting is an American tradition. Before the Civil War, men reenacted battles from the Revolutionary War. They were called sham fights back then. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Today, we're going to get behind the scenes of historic battle reenactments with our next guest, Robert Warren. He is a retired Marine. Rob started Badger Light Infantry and has portrayed several Wisconsin Civil War regiments. And as we talk with him, I hope you'll join in. Tell us why you love the reenactments. Why is history important to you? Let us know how you remember the veterans in your family. You can give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Rob Warren, welcome. Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Happy to be here, Larry.
I'm going to start with a listener. We got a listener from Madison who has a comment for us. Let's just go there.
Hi, Larry.
Hi.
I'd like my name to remain anonymous for the most part. I have a active military affiliation, and that's why. I just finished up listening to your broadcast on the Civil War letters.
Mm-hmm.
And I find it remarkable how little has changed, particularly in the Army and in the Department of Defense. We still do things on a regular basis for the benefit of a lot of our officers. And it's interesting to see that from the Civil War till now, that's still very accurate. The hurry up and wait mentality is very much present. And the purchasing a lot of goods for ourselves also remains very, very relevant today. And I think it's interesting that change hasn't really changed. It's persisted up until now.
Well, thank you very much for calling. Rob, does that apply in reenactments as well?
For the most part, yeah, it was the same when I was in the service. A lot of hurry up and wait, and with reenacting, everybody has to buy all of their own gear. The people that portray officers in reenacting generally, though, for most, at least the groups that I affiliate with, really the guys being officers, they put more of it into the event itself, making sure that their people are taken care of than anything else. It's one of those, if you want to be in a leadership position, you kind of have to leave your ego or your own self-aggrandizement at the door. Otherwise, nobody's going to go to events with you, much less let you be in charge.
Well, for those who have never been to a battle reenactment before, tell us what to expect.
Well, our group doesn't really do battle reenactments anymore. Those are getting fewer and fewer. What we normally do is portray the other 99% of a soldier's life, what they do in camp, constant drill, things like that. And via the drill demonstrations, we can actually kind of do a little bit better job of explaining the tactics of the era, because there's not as much gunfire going on. We'll have somebody designated ahead of time that'll be out there to talk through what's happening and why a commander would do those particular things. So battle reenactments have kind of gone away. One of the other things we do is we work closely with the National Park Service, and we'll go to actual battlefields, portray a specific regiment, and get as close to the actual size of the regiment as we can. And we'll have park rangers. They will basically do a guided tour with us demonstrating what's happening, say, at the Battle of Gettysburg on July 2nd. We'll figure out exactly what that regiment did, demonstrate that for the guests at the park.
Eugene in Viola has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Eugene.
Well, good afternoon or high noon. The clock is just striking. I ran a shoe shine stand at Civil War reenactments. I did Boscobel down here for about 20 years when they were still running. And actually, my favorite one to polish shoes was General Grant. Pretty much.
So you attended several meetings. Is this something that you see, Rob, by the way, that there are people like Eugene that that attend, well, who attends? Let's put it that way.
Just about everybody. We have everything from school groups will attend reenactments, church groups, families, individuals, basically anybody that sees the advertisement and decides, hey, I want to check this out. So it's about as diverse of a crowd as you can imagine when you show up to these things.
And, you know, we talked about the book Heavy Marching, and I don't know if you heard much of it or if you had seen the book. It followed an infantry soldier in Wisconsin's 22nd Volunteers. Do you know anything about the 22nd?
Not off the top of my head, no. we'll usually do we only do two events in Wisconsin now. So we try to keep it Wisconsin-oriented. So about a year out, we'll pick a Wisconsin regiment or a Wisconsin battery to portray. And then we'll spend the next year or so figuring out what specific time period we want to portray and do as much research and find as much information as we can on that unit for that one weekend of the year.
So you'll spend a lot of time, and I understand, you're part of the group Badger Light Infantry. And
yes.
So how many people are involved in it?
Our group is kind of a subgroup of the Liberty Rifles. The Badger Light Infantry, we normally put between 25 and 30 guys in the field at our local events. When we go to a battlefield, our company will usually swell to around 40 or 50 with guys from Illinois and Indiana. And then the Liberty Rifles, they can put anywhere, depending on the event, they can put anywhere between 200 and 400 guys in the field.
So it's quite a sight to see when everybody, even if it's 25 or if it's 400, and they come from what, all walks of life?
Yeah, everything you can think of. We've got guys that are in high school. We've got retired guys. Basically, it's anybody that can look the part of a soldier and do soldier things for a weekend. Is more than welcome to attend.
and spend a few bucks. It must cost a little bit of money for purchasing of guns and all that.
Yeah, to get everything, you're looking at close to $2,000. But while you're getting started, most groups, including ours, have plenty of loaner gear to keep a few guys going so they can get their own stuff.
Rob Warren, our guest today. Rob's a retired Marine, and since retiring, he got involved in starting the Badger Light Infantry and has portrayed several Wisconsin Civil War regiments. And we're going to get into more detail on what goes on with those reenactments and what is all entailed with him after we take a look at the news, because news is coming up right now. And you can join in right now if you'd like. The number is 800-642-1234, or you could email us to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Again, we'll take a quick look at the news, find out what else is in store, and then we'll be back with Robert Warren. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network.
Great music is good for everyone. Let WPR's live-hosted classical music lift your heart and soothe your soul. Tune in from 9 to 3 on weekdays. For our complete classical music schedule, including Wisconsin Classical and Classics by Request, visit WPR.org.
You're listening to The Ideas Network from Wisconsin Public Radio.
Thank Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're talking about war reenactments with an accomplished veteran and historian, Rob Warren, with us. He's a retired Marine. Since retiring, Rob started Badger Light Infantry and has portrayed several Wisconsin Civil War regiments. So as we talk with him, I hope you'll join in. Tell us about the time maybe you went to a war reenactment. What'd you see? Maybe you've taken part in one. What was it like? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, or you can email us to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. David in New Richmond has a question for you, Rob. David, what's on your mind?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I was down at the southern tip of Illinois last year for business and arrived a day early and took a tour through a Civil War cemetery by myself. The very first monument I come to is of a 19-year-old from Wisconsin, and he died down there. And I know this is not something that you would reenact in any way, but he died of dysentery. And I was wondering if your guest could maybe talk just for a minute on how deadly that was in that war and what it actually was. And, you know, there was an example of eventually science making life better for humans because we don't have to deal with that kind of stuff. But if he could maybe talk about that, I know it doesn't have to do anything with a be hard to reenact, isn't it, Terry?
you wouldn't want to reenact it, David, but Rob, a comment.
Well, having had it for real in Afghanistan 04, I'm absolutely certain nobody would want to reenact that. One of the biggest problems, though, with all diseases, not just dysentery, other things like typhoid and yellow fever were also common, malaria as well. They didn't really understand how you caught it. So, especially that you mentioned that the guy was in southern Illinois, diseases were actually really more prevalent in fixed or permanent camps because everybody was jammed together, and the quality of their water more than anything else was what led to these mass outbreaks. And there was nothing available at the time to really treat it well. Things like quinine were starting to be issued to the armies, but really they were just shooting in the dark trying to find something that would help keep guys healthy. One of the things that the Federal Army did very well was provide soldiers with vegetables and vinegar that helped with scurvy at the very least.
Yeah, and there was a lot of scurvy too. And what was it? 2 out of 3 who died in the Civil War died of something other than a bullet. It was
roughly, and that's part of what before General Sherman started his March to the Sea, they essentially started enough to actually participate in a campaign like that. So that's where you had a lot of regiments that had been in the service the longest. Number one, they'd lost a lot of guys already, but a lot of those guys that had survived that far really weren't all that healthy anymore. So almost everybody that participated in Sherman's March to the Sea and the Carolinas campaign, they'd essentially gotten what we would consider a physical before they were even allowed to participate in the campaign.
Yeah. Yeah, the 22nd Wisconsin was in it from start to finish on Sherman's March. And it talked about in the book, Heavy Marching. So interesting. David, thank you very much for calling. Ralph emailed, they have records of their wife's great-grandfather. He fought in the Battle of Dallas New Hope Church. It was wounded in the nose. Interesting story there. He wished he had the letters. Dave emailed. He's wondering if Rob is a member, if you're a member of the organization Liberty Rifles. And maybe talk about your organization.
Yes, I am a member of the Liberty Rifles. I've been with them for, it'll be coming up on 10 years, I think, next year. Our organization, once I got orders to Madison on I&I duty, our organization kind of stemmed from the Liberty Rifles and their model. they're primarily on the East Coast. So we figured we'd bring something that focuses more on historical accuracy to the Midwest. So that's where we get our focus on soldier life in general, not just battles, and our emphasis on portraying that as accurately as possible really stems from my time with the Liberty Rifles.
Yeah,
and we still do events with them. We travel either out east or to the Deep South 2 or 3 times a year, sometimes more.
And I understand that Badger Light Infantry is one of the most historically accurate reenactment groups in the country.
That's what we try for. So far, we haven't heard any complaints.
Dave, who had emailed, also wonders, what's your favorite battlefield? Where do you go?
My favorite battlefield to visit, it's a toss-up between Franklin and Chickamauga. But we go all over. Last summer, we did a portrayal of the 1st Minnesota at Gettysburg, basically to the minute and to the man of what the 1st Minnesota had and did. And that's a memory I'm probably going to have for the rest of my life.
Yeah. I spent a week there and at the battlefield a long time back and at several tours and walking across the battlefield was quite an experience to say the least, for sure. Is it difficult? Dave wonders, is it difficult to find Civil War events in Wisconsin?
Yes and no. We ended up having to start doing our own events. We do Old World Wisconsin. Now it's become an annual thing for us. That'll be the third weekend in July going forward. And that's down by Eagle, Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. And then we do Heritage Hill in Green Bay. We did that last weekend, and we're going to push to get that for the third weekend in August next year. Without us there, both sites have phenomenal programs of their own. And the site directors at both of those sites have been exceedingly gracious and easy to work with for us.
Yeah. Sally in Lanesboro, Minnesota has something. Let's go there. Hi, Sally.
Hi, Larry. How's it going today?
Great. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Well, in these battle reenactments, I definitely honor them and their importance in understanding history. I love to understand history, and making it come alive through reenactments is fun, but there's not a whole lot of place for women in those reenactments. So I thought I would call and tell you about my experience of about, oh man, it was like 40 or 50 years ago. We all got together and we reenacted the Battle of Five Armies, which was in The Hobbit, J.R.R. Tolkien's Hobbit. And it was my favorite. It was my favorite kind of war because it was pretend war. So I wanted to call and let you guys know just how much fun it is to reenact wars, especially pretend war.
Sally, thanks. Comment, Rob?
There's different aspects of the hobby for everybody, and there are groups that do focus on battle reenactments. It's just not something that our group does.
Yeah. Did you make your own uniform, or what does it look like?
Well, it depends on who we're portraying. Some of the stuff I've made myself, some of the stuff that we have to have is way beyond my abilities. Other members become nominators and can just about anything. When we decide that we're going to portray a unit, we figure out exactly what they wore, and then the organization puts together what we call it a group buy, where you can basically get completely outfitted for that event via the group buys, and they cut it down to really a discounted rate for buying everything, because that's how badly the guys who are talented enough to make things want this to be done correctly. So a lot of the stuff in the group buys is really sold for just the cost of the materials to make it.
So that's of course there are the guns or the rifles typically that, and where do they come from?
Well, for Liberty Rifle stuff, a lot of us use originals. The productions pretty much all come from Italy nowadays. And prices on those can vary depending on what you're trying to get.
And the range of the prices, I mean, is it $1,000 or?
$1,000 is a good round number. Some are more, a little more expensive than that. Some are a little bit less. But if I had to just generalize, I'd say $1,000 for a rifle and bayonet.
Oh, so there's definitely some cost involved in this. So let's take the last reenactment. Maybe you can tell us, I mean, it's not, you don't specialize in the battle itself. So what happens at one of your reenactments?
Well, the last battle reenactment we did was down at Fort Blakely, Alabama, kind of down by Mobile. And it's really the only battle reenactment that we do because it's so tightly controlled that everything stays exactly on script. Our events, we focus on soldier life, so you'll see a lot of drill. You'll see people doing living in camp, whether it's cooking, playing cards, shooting dice, mending uniforms, anything that a soldier could conceivably do when they're left alone, as well as when they do actually have to do something like company drill or various types of soldier training. Like, we also do bayonet exercise frequently, but we do different types of drill depending on the unit and the time frame.
So, and then for somebody who's coming to it, then, as let's say there are soldiers sitting there, do you kind of person who's observing just ask questions, or what do they do?
Kind of pull people in. So there'll be one guy just kind of standing around and basically acting like a greeter for our guests. And we're fortunate in that most of our guys are kind of outgoing. So even if that guy's busy, they'll still start talking to the spectators or the visitors. And once you get the conversation started, then the conversation turns into 15, 20 minutes or longer, depending on what their interest and level of interest.
Somebody else wondered about cannons. They were used during the war. Do you drag cannons along with you to these events?
Yes, we do. We recently have a group out of Illinois that started working with us, and some guys in southern Wisconsin also work with us. So next year we'll be starting to bring cannons to our local events. When we travel, we also work with another offshoot of the Liberty Rifles called First Section, and they'll put together an entire battery, horse-drawn, battery forge, everything that an actual Civil War artillery battery would have with it.
Lizzen Holman emailed. She wonders what kind of books you've read to gain the knowledge that you have about the Civil War.
Lots of them. At this point, I really prefer reading soldiers' diaries more than anything else. Just given my own personal experiences overseas, you don't really get on by reading books about battles and books in general. You really want to read the book that was written by a private or a sergeant or a captain. But I've also been doing this since on and off since 1997, so there's been a lot of reading.
Well, you're going to want to get your hands on a copy of Heavy Marching, almost for sure, because the Civil War letters of Lute Mosley, 22nd Wisconsin, are really illuminating. And it would be, I think, from your point of view, because you've read so many of these, it'd be interesting. I'd love to hear your take on what you think of his letters, which are fairly eloquent, and just talk about what you described, the life, you know, the day-to-day things that happen, the irritations and sometimes the rewards of the work that he was doing as a Civil War soldier. Peter, I'm sorry, go ahead, Rob.
It's certainly something we can look at. We haven't picked a portrayal for Heritage Hill next year yet.
Oh, well, that might be worth might be definitely worth a look then. Peter in Wausau sent an email. He's wondering What's your favorite thing about doing war reenactments?
It's probably conveying how these guys really were, but the extraordinary things that they accomplished and the hardships that they endured for whether it was 2, 4, or 3 years. I think a lot of people lose sight of that because they get focused on the big name battles or the famous generals. They kind of overlook what the average soldier really lived for, you know, a couple of years of his life.
Yeah, yeah. Diane in Eau Claire has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Diane.
Hi. I wanted to make a comment. My mother belonged to a Civil War nurses reenactment group near Green Bay called Angels of the Battlefield. And I don't know if they're active anymore, but regarding that woman who is interested in reenacting, you could possibly be searching for things like that. I know my mom really enjoyed it. Unfortunately, she's in a memory care facility now. But when we cleaned out her house, there was her kit. She made her own dresses, and she had a lot of fun and enjoyment out of that.
Oh, Diane, thank you so much. I'm sorry about your mom's current condition, but thank you so much for sharing that. Rob, what about women and reenacting?
They're certainly out there. We affiliate with a group called the Columbia Society. They have a few members in Wisconsin, but they're mostly out of Michigan. And again, they do various portrayals depending on, number one, what they want to do, but also what else the umbrella organization, like Liberty Rifles or somebody else, what events they're putting on. They'll try to find a portrayal that they can do in a scenario.
And I got a note from Bob in Clinton asking what the soldiers ate during the war, and I'm wondering, along with that, do you know, the hardtack or whatever, do you try to emulate that in the campments?
Absolutely. It is one of my favorite things, is especially when we get newer members, and they have to try to figure out how to cook their own food. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Normally we cook with one or two guys designated as company cooks, and they'll cook for the whole group. They may or may not know what they're doing, so the quality of our food varies just like it did for the soldiers. That's the way company cooks were usually designated, for a week or a month or something like that. So the Army would try to issue at least 1 pound of salt pork a day, 10 hard crackers. There'd be a coffee ration. When it was available, you could get sugar. There were also substitutions to all of that. You might get flour instead of bread, hardtack. You might get soft bread instead of hardtack. You could get fresh pork or fresh beef, depending on where you were at, instead of salt pork. And like I mentioned earlier, one of the things the Federal Army did very well was provide desiccated vegetables, basically dried vegetables. To the Army, it was to ward off scurvy. But for the men, it was just a break from the hardtack and salt pork as your primary source of food.
Well, Jim emailed us, can a post-Civil War weapon be used? He has an 1866, 67 number 2 Remington and double-barrel Nimrick Arms 45 caliber, about 120 years old.
No, we're pretty strict about and sometimes we even get them to, if it wasn't available in that particular year, you can't use it.
Okay, so it's that strict.
Yes. So just as an example, the Springfield rifle musket, there's the 1855, 61, 63, they're all rifles. But if you're doing an 1861 or 62 event, you can't use the 1863 because it wasn't around yet.
Oh, man, it's that. Oh, that's cool. You guys have a website, Rob?
No, we have Instagram for Badger Light Infantry, and we also have a Facebook page.
So Facebook might be an easy thing. Badger Light Infantry, is that the page?
Yep.
Well, it sounds like you've had a lot of fun, and it's the most rewarding for you is what?
Like I said, it's really just talking to people about what it's like to be an infantryman. And like the first caller when we got on, day in and day out, an infantryman's life really hasn't changed all that much.
Yeah.
You're always tired. You're always hungry. You never get to sleep enough. You never get to know. It's punctuated by a few moments of fear and uncertainty surrounded by a whole lot of boredom.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's fun talking about it, Rob. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. Appreciate it very much. Thanks, Rob.
Have a good day, Larry.
Rob Warren, retired Marine, and since retiring, he started Badger Light Infantry and has portrayed several Wisconsin Civil War regiments. And if you go on to Facebook, Badger Light Infantry, you're going to find their page and learn more about what they're up to. And by the way, I think the, I was trying to think, there's a spot, there's a page you can go to, the National Park Service, go there and you can find where all of the Civil War reenactments are being held at that page. Tomorrow, Phil Pelletieri's back to talk about the fall ant swarms, the box elder bugs, and a whole lot more. So we'll look forward to that. In the meantime, thank you so much for listening, and please stay with us. Lots more in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.